Today on Maine Calling, secrets to a long-lasting relationship. It's February 14th, Valentine's Day, a day to celebrate romantic love. The thing about that, though, is that romantic love can be fickle. The spark so often just flames out. Some, the lucky among us, seem to have a secret and just know how to keep that spark glowing for a long, long time. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn from lovers among us who are in long, happy relationships. What are their tips? Former Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg had one. She famously said, "The secret to a good marriage is to be a little deaf." Whether your advice is funny or earnest, we'd love to hear from you. Maine Calling goes mushy. That's just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Maine Health, where care teams provide expert coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Yes, today is Valentine's Day, so we are talking about relationships. What makes for a good one? What are the keys to staying together for the long haul? We especially want to hear from older couples who've been with one another for decades. If that's you, please call in and share your wisdom with us. My guest today, Natalia Sorline, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist with Three Little Birds Therapy and Wellness in Westbrook and Brunswick, and Dr. Tom Muser, a gerontologist, clinical psychologist, and social scientist. He's a specialist in cognition and wellness and aging with GeroPsych Maine. Did I pronounce that right? Great. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you do to make sure your relationship's a healthy one? Would you like some relationship advice? Do you have questions for our experts today? Well, you can do it all by sending a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Tom, every once in a while, when I'm looking through the obituaries in the paper, I see a couple that's been married something like 70 years. Jimmy and Rosalind Carter, among those couples that have been married for so long. And, you know, it just is so breathtaking. And I understand that you got to interview one of those amazing couples. And tell me about that experience and what you learned from them.
Well, I love talking to older adults, particularly older couples, about how they met and their life together. A number of years ago, I had the good fortune to interview Millie and Bud. Both were in their late 90s, and it was on the occasion of their 78th wedding anniversary, which is just, it is mind-blowing. And I asked Millie, you know, what keeps a marriage together all these years? And she said, learn to give in one to the other, which I think is actually very good advice. Now, it was interesting because she also then in the next sentence said, but we are fighting more now than ever before. And one of the reasons was that Bud was having serious hearing loss and she had a soft voice. And so his age-related hearing loss was interacting to make the relationship a little more stormy, but the bond that they shared together was still really strong too. And I think that made the difference.
Natalia, when you hear that, learn to give in one to the other, what do you think?
Well, for on this end, it's all about accepting influence from our partner and ourselves. And that leads to a healthy relationship. And for your couple, Tom, I would give them a little advice. I'd be like, when we talk to each other, touch your shoulder, create eye contact. Basics. I love it.
Is another way of saying learn to give in one to another, Tom, don't be so stubborn?
I think that's a reasonable reframing. I mean, I think that as we age, each individual is facing maybe some new life challenges, whether it be in health or function or new life roles. Maybe it's retirement. Maybe there are new relationships, grandchildren or great grandchildren. So it's a period of change, which also I think is it says a lot about cooperating and finding peace between two people.
Natalia, how do you define what counts as a successful relationship? I mean, we started the program by talking about people who have been married for decades and decades. Is longevity a measure, or how would you measure a successful relationship?
I'm going to bounce off what Tom was just saying about stubborn. I heard the word stubborn. I was like, because here's the thing, for a successful relationship, what they remember is that the relationship is for the other person. I'm not in a relationship for me because, that's too much. It's for the other person. We are in the care of each other. And of course, for the person, for it to be successful, they view the relationship the same way. They're like, well, my partner is for me. And that's generally a trademark of a successful relationship.
It's so interesting you say that for one another because I'm going to read a comment from our producer, Cindy Hahn. Cindy writes, "My parents are in their 90s and have been married for 66 years. My dad still treats my mom as if he's courting her. I asked him to share what he sees as important in their relationship, and he said, I always thought of her first and tried to think of things, look at things from her perspective, starting when we were courting. And I still do that now today. I always try to think from her point of view and put her first." So that's really what you're talking about. The relationship is for the other person and not for you.
Right.
That's really interesting. Tom, I'm wondering if you believe that the relationship advice changes as we age, or not really.
In a way, I think separating out relationships maybe post age 60 or 65 from those in the 30s or 40s is kind of artificial. No offense to those who developed this topic for today, but I one of my goals in teaching younger persons about aging is that older persons are just the same as you. They're just older, and many of the issues are the same. So however, I think as we age, we develop life wisdom. We have experiences that become touchstones. When we experience something in the present, we can relate it to the past, and it may increase adaptability.
And Natalia, is part of it too your relationship with yourself, whether you're successful, if you're looking to the other person for validation? I mean, there's so many old saws that the more you think about him, he makes me whole or she makes me whole. That really isn't a recipe for a long relationship, is it, if you're depending on someone else?
It truly is not, and I'm going to agree with Tom too, that things do change, and at the same time, they stay the same. One of a theorist I know stated, "Hey, miserable couples and relationships have all the same elements, and successful couples in the same and their relationships have also the same elements."
And
So,
what are those elements?
accepting influence is one of them, as Tom kind of brought up, and thinking of the other person, recognizing that we are in the care of each other is the second one. And the third one, my favorite, is kind of that bidding daily process, that how do we establish daily routines to connection? And when our partner comes home, or we come home, or we are home, and we look at them and we go, "Hey, partner, there's a nice bird out there." What do they do with that? Do they go, "Oh, yeah, whatever, bird, great." Or they go, "Oh, yeah, that's nice," which is option two. Or number three is, "Oh, that is a beautiful bird. Look at that. Just look at it." And it's all about that bidding process. Are we ignoring and just kind of our partner's interests? Are we going, "Okay, we'll take a middle of the roader," or are we completely invested, even though maybe I just don't care about birds, and that's okay. So that's kind of the markers we're seeing.
Tom.
I agree with that completely, Natalia. And what make it makes me think about where I am. I've been married 35 years. I'm recently retired, although I'm really just semi-retired. I'm still doing some work. But our kids are out of the house, and I think my wife and I are finding ways to share our daily experiences and what we care about now, separate from the hubbub of raising kids full career days, where we would come home from work and both plop on the couch. Now we have to really think about each other. And I would say that a measure of success for my marriage is that we both actively think of the other, and we ask the other, we engage the other. So it's mutuality that's important as well.
Well, joining us now is Senator Angus King, who has been married. Senator King, how long have you and Mary been married?
41 years, 2 weeks ago. Seems like
41
41
years.
days.
Congratulations. And so we're going to ask your advice. And I want to sort of say that I know that being a congressional or a senator's spouse is probably pretty challenging. And so I'm guessing you're navigating some. Just the fact that you have to be away a lot, navigating some challenges that couples don't. What's your secret to making it still last?
Well, in thinking about joining you this morning, Jennifer, you know me. I made a list, and let me begin at the beginning. Number one is choose carefully in the first place. I tell high school graduates, when in doubt, don't get married. And marriage is wonderful. It's been wonderful for me, but if it doesn't feel right at the beginning, chances are it's not going to get better. The other piece of advice in that regard is to both parties, don't look on the other person as a project. If you start the relationship thinking, well, he's okay, but he's got some rough edges which I'm going to fix, that doesn't work. And it leads to frustration on one side and anger on the other. So that's number one, is to choose carefully in the first place. Second, be honest from the start. Repressed anger, in my experience, or disappointment, eventually comes out. And it usually comes out in an inappropriate time, or it festers and is even worse. So if something is not right that you don't like, you should share it. You should say, look, this just isn't working for me. And then you can sort of talk it through rather than just swallow it and say, oh, I'll just get by this, because eventually it'll come out in the end. Here's number three, for men. Sometimes all it takes is listening. Men have a tendency to want to fix things and to want to explain, and sometimes with Mary and I, all that's really necessary is just a sympathetic ear. Rather than immediately saying, well, let's do this, this, or this, or you should do this or that. As I say, I think sometimes all it takes is listening. And here's one on the other side, I think, that men that harm relationships as far as men, acknowledge both parties trying, even if it isn't done right. If your partner unloads the dishwasher and puts some of the dishes in the wrong place, they should be acknowledged for unloading the dishwasher, not criticized for putting the dishes in the wrong place. That's a recipe for frustration. If you're trying to do something helpful, and instead of being acknowledged, it turns into something wrong. Number five, and by the way, my list is 10. I always have a list of 10. Never stop courting. Flowers, gifts. This week, I got a package in Washington from Mary for Valentine's Day, and it was a wonderful quilt, right out of the blue. That I could just use to snuggle up and watch television at night. But it came, it was just unexpected, spontaneous dates. Coming home on a Thursday night and say, hey, let's go out for pizza, or let's go down the street. Something that I do for Mary that she really likes is I fill the gas tank whenever I'm in the car. So when she starts out the week, she has a full tank of gas. It's a little thing, but it's something that, that I think keeps the relationship on a positive level. Number six, listen for something that's expressed as a wish and then surprise them with it. If you're at a store and your partner said, boy, that's a really nice picture, if you get it for them 2 weeks later, it's two things. They like the picture, but they also like it that you paid attention, that you attended to something that they expressed. Number seven, I'm sorry to go on so long. Number seven, time is the most valuable thing you can give. And you just have to be aware of where you're spending your time and try to honor your partner with time, you're my first priority. I may want to go and go fishing or do something else, but this has to be a fair allocation. Number eight, one that Mary mentioned this morning, never go to sleep angry. Figure it out. Don't go to sleep angry and let it fester overnight. Number nine, look for common interests. Look fine, and it may not be something you're really into, but to have a common interest, for example, I really love NFL football. Every Sunday afternoon, that's where I'm going to be. So is Mary. And she puts on her Packers shirt on a Sunday afternoon because she's from Wisconsin. But she shares that with me. And, of course, we share each other's work and that kind of thing. And she's been very supportive of me through this wacky business of politics. The final one I have on my list is hugs go a long way. Just a random hug every now and then in the middle of the day, in the morning. For me, I think that's something that really makes a difference. And again, it keeps the spirit of the romance alive. That I care about you, and I'm gonna show you just with this a squeeze of the hand or a hug, kiss. That's what makes all the difference. So that's my list. I've thrown a lot at you. I apologize.
Well, thank you for this thoughtful list. It's interesting. I'd heard your dishwasher analogy in terms of towels. I'd heard that early in my marriage. If your husband folds the towels, don't complain that he folded them wrong, but appreciate that he folded them. Before you go, Senator King, I'm going to ask our experts today if they have thoughts about your list. Natalia Sorlene's going first.
Senator, I think you cracked the relationship code and you don't even need a PhD in it. That's exactly kind of where we go with it. And it's all those small things that fall apart over time. And I gave you a star, a little asterisk. I was taking a list of your preparedness, which I appreciate and admire. And you mentioned filling the gas tank. Yes, I think it's a thing. I too get my gas tank filled.
Oh my gosh. Well, my husband has been shoveling this week, so I appreciate that. What about you, Tom?
Well, it's just an honor to be with you, Senator King, and I love the top 10. I think this top 10 needs to go somewhere special so others can learn from it. You know, that fixing of the partner, or if the partner suggests a challenge, I have lived it, and I have learned I've learned the hard way to listen and then to ask permission. Could I make a suggestion, or are you wanting a suggestion? And, you know, my wife really appreciates when I do that. And sometimes she says yes.
Natalia. Yeah,
but it's much better if you ask first for the suggestion rather than immediately start in with instructions. Right, Tom?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a recipe for separation and distance.
Tom, you are onto something. That is 100% a recipe for separation and distance. And I get to teach people that, like, hey, we're not here to fix it. It's so much easier. People do so much work to roll up their sleeves and go for it when all we need to do is step back and be like, what does this listening thing entail? And that entails reflection and validation. And for anyone trying to figure out this topic of, like, how do I listen? Just ask yourself the question, what is my partner feeling? Use the F word. What is their emotion? And kind of guess. Be like, you know, that sounds really frustrating, the thing that happened, huh? And Senator, as you said, then we ask for that permission, like, hey, would you like me to just listen or roll it up and go? So, yeah.
Senator Angus King, I so appreciate it. Congratulations on your 41st wedding anniversary. And I actually really like your first one, which is to choose wisely, because I think anybody who's met Mary Herman might agree that that was the most important one.
Yeah, absolutely. I married up without a doubt, Jennifer. I got to tell you that.
Oh, well, thank you so much for calling in and being part of this conversation. We'd love to have those of you in the audience who are listening and either smiling or shaking your head call in right now, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're discussing the secrets to a strong, long-lasting relationship. What does it take to forge a lasting partnership? My guest today, Dr. Tom Muser, a gerontologist and clinical psychologist with GeroPsych Maine, and Natalia Sorlene, a marriage and family therapist with Three Little Birds Therapy and Wellness. We invite you to join the conversation. What is the best relationship advice you've ever received or given? For the young folks listening, what advice would you like to share? Maybe you see things a little differently. Send an email, talk@mainpublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Carol Colton, who lives in Portland, is retired, and has been married to her husband, Mike, for 56 years. She's also president of the Independent Seniors Network. Carol, thanks so much for giving us a call.
Yes, good morning.
Talk
Thank
about
you for including me.
This is wonderful, 56 years, more than a half century. How would you describe your relationship over the years? Has it always been smooth sailing?
There's always ups and downs, but it, in general, I would say it's been very good, and it still is very good.
What to you,
you
are the
learn.
Most... I cut you off. Go ahead.
That's all right. You just have to learn to work through the downs, and then ups follow.
And what's your advice for working through the downs?
Compromise and understanding of the other person and what they're feeling, being kind, empathetic, just always being considerate. It's very important to be supportive of anything the other partner finds interesting.
Yeah, it strikes me kind, empathetic, considerate, Tom Muser. These are not terrible things for all your relationships, not just your romantic relationships. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, and I just wanted to ask Carol a question. So, Carol, you know, you and your husband each have your own areas of interest. And I wonder how balancing your individual needs to do things and to achieve in your own little space, how you balance that in a successful marriage that lasts this long?
That's a good question. I think balancing it it really came naturally to us. Some things that were his interest and were not mine, I joined in, and vice versa. For instance, he was an avid tennis player, and I was about as non-athletic as you can get. So I learned to play tennis, not with him because he was too much better than me, but at least we had the same interest. But there have been other things, and he shares what he is interested in with me, and I share what is interesting to me with him.
Carol, what about smaller day-to-day things? Any simple tips to, if you were going to be talking to, a set of newlyweds, what would you say?
The old adage, never go to bed mad. That, I think, makes a huge difference because things can fester overnight. Things like kind of a division of labor. Decide in the beginning, you know, who's going to be responsible for what, so there's never any animosity over who did the dishes last or something like that. I do all the cooking. My husband does all the cleanup. And it works very well for both of us because he hates cooking and I'm not crazy about doing dishes. Things like the laundry. He did it. He took over when he was retired and I was still working, but then he was happy to give it back to me when I retired. But cleaning around the house, we each have our chores and we just have naturally fallen into what he's willing to do and what I'm willing to do. And you just have to, that's important, I think, because it saves a lot of minor disagreements and arguments if you are pretty upfront with each other right away.
Carol, I am thinking about how Tom said that he and his wife are recently retired and have more time together. Was that a big transition for you and your husband when you had a lot more time together? I'm asking because I have a couple friends I can think of who say things like, "Oh my gosh, my husband follows me around talking to me all day. I don't know how I'm gonna handle this very well."
Well, actually, my husband retired about 6 years before I did, so I think he got used to being by himself all the time. So it was more of an adjustment for him to have me around. But I had a lot of things that I wanted to do when I retired, so I pretty much kept out of his way, I think. So it wasn't too much of an issue. But then there were things we both wanted to do, and we worked on doing those things together, too. All the things that you say you want to do when you retire, it's like almost relearning who the other person is when you're both together all the time. And that really hasn't been the case your whole married life.
Yeah. Well, I so appreciate you calling in and sharing your story. Carol Colton and her husband, Mike, have been married for 56 years. Natalia, because you're a therapist, I'm guessing you have a lot of couples who come to you and things are not going right. And I'm wondering if you could talk briefly about what some of the more common reasons are, what you see over and over again, and maybe ways to avoid getting to that place.
Well, I think Carol is onto something. You're onto something, Carol, because here's this conversation about expectations. We've talked about this division of labor and like who does what, and oftentimes couples do not talk about this. And when I look at them and go, how is this decided? Who is doing the dishes? They go, I don't know, I've always done it myself. And then it just kind of snowballs from there, because, you know, as a therapist, we look at just that removed party looking at, giving couples a third perspective, asking the question of how did we decide this? How did we get here? And that's usually just a conversation to being had with,
Tom.
You know, what struck me with Carol's conversation is how much she and her husband saw retirement as an opportunity to reconnect, to make new plans, to do things together. I think having a forward mindset, looking to the future, still being in a period of discovery with the partner is really important for a long marriage.
I love it, Tom, because Carol also talked about how she was an individual too. Both are important. That's phenomenal.
What about stressors, Natalia? I've read that sort of the leading stressor in a long-term relationship is often money. Do you see that often? And if so, what kind of advice do you have for couples when they talk about money?
Financial stressors, those come up often and frequently, especially if we have spenders versus not so versus savers. And those are also a conversation. They're a conversation about sometimes I have couples create an exact framework of, hey, once a week we sit down and look at money together, or hey, here is a budget for each of us. And I am actually curious about, Tom, what are you noticing for how the money conversation, how does it change as there's aging involved? Because I wonder if that changes since my couples are usually a little younger.
Yeah, I think it's different in the sense of how long will my resources last? So how much can I withdraw from my retirement, still keep a nest egg, but have good quality of life in the moment? And I think having a lot of conversation and negotiation around that is really important for a successful long-term marriage. And, you know, in times that are uncertain economically, politically, whatever, I think that can be also an added stressor in a marriage. So keeping lines of communication open around money is an important factor for success.
I'm going to go to an email here. This is from Robert. Feel free to spat over things that do not matter, lest pent-up steam gets in the way with dealing with things that do matter. Okay, so if you're allowed to spat about things that do not matter. And I see you both smiling and nodding. Natalia, what would be something that doesn't matter? Would it be Senator King's example of how you load the dishwasher?
Well, actually, I'd like to say something on the side on that. On things that do not matter, I ask my couples, is this the hill you want to die on? Most hills do not matter. They really, truly do not. And it all comes down to acceptance of the other partner doing things differently. It also comes down to being not just accepting and being authentic in a relationship. So feel free to spat. And with spats, particularly spats, what we notice is some couples, we meet them, one is like high spat level, right? However, both parties do it, or however many parties are involved in a relationship, then they're okay. That's just their modus of operandi, and they enjoy that bickering. Now, if a couple comes in and they're both very low-key, not bickering, not spatting, and that's how they operate, that's okay. That is how they operate. Now, where we run into trouble is if one is high spat and the other one is low-key and not so spatty, we run into trouble because now that is a personality difference. That's a different approach to negotiating anything that we need to negotiate. And there's a lot of things to negotiate.
Calling in now, Frank Brooks and Marvin Ellison, a longtime married couple and both active in supporting LGBTQ rights. Thank you, Frank and Marvin, for joining us.
Thank you.
We have both of you on separate lines, so this is going to be a test of how in sync you are. I'm joking. Let me start by talking to you, Frank. Your marriage path, I understand, has been a bit unconventional. Tell us about your previous marriage and then what happened.
Well, I was in a marriage way back in the 1970s, in a heterosexual marriage, and came out as a gay man right in 1978, and co-parented a child from that marriage, and very successfully, I believe. And I met Marvin in 1994. We're now going on 31 years. And we weren't able to be married until 2013, I believe it was, at the end of 2012 here in Maine. And so we held off because we had some thoughts about the institution of marriage, but we were married in 2018. And so we both have combined different types of relationships, but we found each other, and for that, I'm eternally grateful.
Do you have words of wisdom to how you and Marvin maintain a happy, lasting marriage?
I do. I have a list also. It's not 10 items, but I put down honoring each other's idiosyncratic behaviors. Now, I had to scratch out irritating and replace it with idiosyncratic, but I really do mean that.
Reframing. And,
yes, and also the use of humor. Marvin is very funny, and he keeps me laughing, and that has been since the very beginning of our relationship. And the other thing that Marvin and I have really tried to do is stay connected to a supportive community that includes LGBTQIA folks, but also heterosexual allies who really honor and respect our relationship. And the last item is also, which we haven't talked about too much, is having a healthy sexual intimate relationship through aging, which can be challenging, but also very gratifying.
Marvin, your turn. Frank's gotten to do all the talking. What about you? Do you see things any differently than Frank as far as what the keys are to your relationship?
Well, he can't see me smile because I'm in another room on the phone. But I was nodding my head and really appreciating how he reframed irritating into idiosyncratic. He's such a sweet guy. You know, one of the things I think about is how the singer Otis Redding put it. He said, it's never a bad idea to try a little tenderness in a relationship. And I think what I've experienced in my connection with Frank over the years is we both have an investment in showing each other respect. I think showing signs of affection, including physical affection, and paying attention to each other. And as Frank said, having a sense of humor goes a long way toward keeping a relationship strong. I think the thing that I've been thinking about before coming on the call was two practices that I think Frank and I have developed with each other that have really helped us. I think one of those practices is we regularly express appreciation and our gratitude to each other. And that includes just for the small things in everyday life, like one of us will prepare a meal and have it ready and waiting for the other one at the end of a long day, or Frank will brush the snow off my car without even my having to ask him if he would do that. Or I'll fold his laundry and put it away for him. It's those sort of small gestures of kindness that make a difference, but it's also expressing gratitude and being explicit about that. And I think the other sort of helpful practice that I've benefited from over our years together is what I might call good housekeeping. Doesn't mean keeping a tidy house as much as it means, I think, in an ongoing way, trying to clean up our messes that you sort of make along the way, you know, those missteps and misunderstandings and mistakes that are bound to happen. And I think the thing that has helped us is, in a timely fashion, I think each of us tries to take responsibility to make amends if that's called for, and then commit ourselves to doing better the next time. It also is good that both of us acknowledge we are perfectly imperfect, and yet we trust that each of us is doing the best we can.
Well, you two are inspiring. Thank you so much for calling in. That was Frank Brooks and Marvin Ellison from Portland. We do need to go to a break, but when we come back, Natalia and Tom, I'll have you reflect on what we've learned from Frank and Marvin. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're talking about the secrets to a lasting partnership. Joining me, couples therapist Natalia Sorlin and gerontologist and psychologist Tom Muser. What are your questions? What's your perspective? What's your advice? Send us a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. So right before the break, we heard from Frank Brooks and Marvin Ellison. And I'm wondering, Tom, what you heard that you liked or didn't like in what they had to say.
Well, I know Frank and Marvin personally, and I must say that it was so enjoyable listening to their perspectives, because I've seen this self and mutual care in action, and they know how to do it. So three cheers for both of them. You know, they brought up the issue of intimacy and sexuality, which I think is another aspect of a long, successful marriage. It can change with aging. So a recent AARP Michigan poll asked older adults how important sex was in their relationships, particularly their partner relationships. And 3/4 of them said important or very important. 3/4 also said they were pretty satisfied with that in their relationships. So one of the, I think, ways that we can be successful in long relationships is also kind of exploring change, how health may change intimacy, how personal needs change intimacy, and keeping the dialogue open in both for both sides.
Natalia.
I'm a little bit stumped because, well, I'm not stumped. Frank and Marvin do have a phenomenal relationship, and they listed everything that I would be like, wow, you know what? I have names for all of that, and humor and reframing and all that. And unfortunately, I don't have any additional information to provide for what Tom was saying about intimacy, because it is a conversation. Changing and aging in in our sexual lives and intimate lives, it's a conversation to be had. It's not something to shy away from. It's more like, hey, I'm different, and so are you, and we go from there. So I'm not sure where to, if you'd like me to add kind of what I'm noticing on what does work. Because again, we do have a master's of relationships here, and they are doing it with anticipating needs and appreciation. And to add on to that, it also sounds like there's no labels. There's no labels attached to, hey, you always forget the socks, and let's add some name calling in here. And that's just kind of the generals of working with couples to.
Yeah, no labels, no saying you always. If you're starting a sentence, you always, that's probably not a sentence you ought to finish. Tom, go ahead.
The story goes that, oh my God, I walked in on my parents when, or that kind of, thinking about sexuality as different at age 80 versus different at age 40. I think the aspects of communication are exactly the same. The mechanics and what you consider intimacy might change. So for aging men, erectile dysfunction is a reality. There are other sexual realities for women. And I think part of a successful marriage is finding the pleasure and joy sharing with each other whatever is reasonable and possible.
Natalia, they mentioned humor, and I'm wondering if part of humor is not taking yourself too seriously.
Absolutely. That is absolutely part of humor. It's also being able to step back from a problem, look at it, and be like, you know what? This is funny. We'll take ownership for what we can and go from there.
We have an email here from Frank. I've been married 10 years, and I've always offered this feedback to my wife when she vented a struggle or frustration with me. Well, it could be worse, you know. I was recently told by a therapist that that is quite possibly the worst thing you can say to someone who's having a hard time dealing with something. So I no longer offer that perspective to my wife, even though I still feel that way. And Frank put a smiley face. And Frank, I really appreciate your honesty in saying something that you realized that you were doing that maybe was not helpful. That's great. And Natalia, you raised your coffee mug or tea mug in a toast. This is something you've heard.
Correct. And I hear it all the time. It's like, yeah, it could be worse. And I agree, it could be worse. And in that moment, what we do is we step into our partner's shoes for a minute and just reflect and validate. It's all about validating their experiences. And we all know it could be worse. We know that.
Yeah, so if someone's listening right now, what are some other phrases maybe you don't want to be saying? I mean, we mentioned you always already. Are there others? Well, I will tell you the advice I got when I got married is never say to the other, "You're just like your mother," or "You're just like your father." Tom, go ahead.
Oh boy, if I said that, I'd be really in trouble in my relationship. I think something and I guess I'll speak for myself here, something that I've learned too over time. Sometimes I'll hear something from my wife about a struggle she's having, and I'm like, oh, I'm having that same struggle in this part of my life, and I've learned to withhold that and not jump in and make it about me. Because in that moment, I know it needs to stay with her. But I've had to learn that. Anyway, that's another one.
Here's an email from Tom and Susan. We've been married 55 years. One year we made up a code. The three C's have been our strength all this time. Life together is blissful. C, commitment. C, communication. C, compromise. There you go. Natalia, I see you writing them down.
They are on to something: commitment, communication, and compromise. And guess what? Those things are not something we come in knowing. Sometimes it's something we learn. We learn about it because we look at our family and we go, wait, what did they do? And they are not communicating, compromising, or any of that. None of those beautiful three C's. And so then we go to a therapist and we go, hey, how do we do that? And that's a learned behavior. Like, Tom, like what you were saying, you said, you know, I learned to take a pause. I learned to take a pause and go, wait a second.
Yeah.
I am just going to allow this to just sit here.
I have one more C.
Go ahead, Tom.
Cuddling.
Ah, I love it.
Let's add cuddling to that.
Yep.
That's great. Well, I was thinking that, excuse me, I turned away from the microphone. I was thinking that communication is really the hard one, right, Tom? Human beings are not very good communicators, are we?
No, we're great mind readers. So.
Yeah, and the harder part of communication is allowing the other person to speak and really listening and taking it to heart. I think as humans, we're much more tuned to saying what we think.
An email here from Bruce. We've been together for over 40 years and married nearly 37 years. We try to never go to bed mad. We kiss hello and goodbye. Long ago, we settled into tasks for each around the house. I will build things, including a couple houses, but she picks the colors and decorates. We have maintained friendships from youth and each spend time with those people. Angus is 100% right. Do not assume you will change someone inside a marriage. If you think a guy is a knucklehead when you are dating, he will probably be a knucklehead after the ceremony. If you meet someone who admits to once being a knucklehead, but you see none of that behavior, he has probably changed himself. So, you know, this is a really tricky one, and we're talking about longevity in relationships, but I think people who meet young, it's tricky, right, Natalia, because we all change, and our 20s are times of great change. And so maybe you do discover someone you just consider a diamond in the rough, but maybe it's not your job to change that person, but just observe.
Yeah, it is tough. And at the same time, when we meet in our 20s, we grow on each other. We grow with each other. And then we do find that B word, you know, that balance of individuality versus who are we in a relationship as well. And that's tough, especially in that life cycle of chaos, especially if we're young. Say we meet in our 20s and 25, 35, we're having kids. There's no time for a relationship. And that's where we navigate all that together.
Tom, how do you prevent getting bored with one another?
Good one.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think you remain open to the surprises of life that may happen. And you take the time to find out what's in each person's day and make some time to do something special with each other. That's the best advice I have.
An email here from Samantha. I was told by my maid of honor that being married meant from now on, I will be the one to always know where things are. I have successfully answered the questions, honey, have you seen the fill in the blank thousands of times in the past 25 years? Another smiley face. And I'm thinking about that and smiling because it was not my mother, but my father. I mean, my mother is very organized, but my father always knew where everything was. So it's funny. Let's see. We're going to go to Holly, who's calling from Auburn. And Holly, you just made it under the wire. Go ahead.
I just want to say that you are each other's on each other's team, not your parents, not your children, not your friends. It's the two of you.
On each other's team. Natalia nodding.
100%. All day, every day.
Yeah. Thank you, Holly, for that. What about Natalia, I'll turn back to you, presuming the best intention. Mm-hmm. You know, often, and I don't think this is just in relations or romantic relationships, someone says something and you could take it this way or you could take it that way. And having a presumption that the person is coming from a place of goodwill, how important is that?
That unconditional positive regard is one of the most important things we can do. Because it helps us separate our own initial knee-jerk reaction and step away and look at it. Wait a second. I'm going to give it a moment to settle because I truly believe that my partner has the best intent. And this does need to go both ways.
Yeah. And Tom, we just have a few seconds left. What would you add to that?
Yeah, I guess I'd like to just raise another aspect of long relationships. It's not for this show because we're about to finish, but perhaps another conversation. And many aging couples, one ends up caring for another. There's a responsibility shift one to the other. And how do you remain intimate and close when one is having to do care tasks for the other? It would be a really interesting conversation to have, but I wanted to acknowledge that for those listening who are in that situation.
That it is important and tough. Well, of course, we are out of time, and I would like to talk about that more. But thank you both for joining us today, Dr. Tom Muser, a gerontologist, clinical psychologist, and social scientist who specializes in wellness and aging with Geropsych Maine, and Natalia Sorlene, a licensed marriage and family therapist with Three Little Birds Therapy and Wellness in Westbrook and Brunswick. Today's sound engineer was Jessica Miller. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn, and our theme music was composed by Mike Gendreau. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio. Happy Valentine's Day and happy President's Day on Monday.